The Walking Dead Talk Through, Episode 41, Last Day on Earth, Review.
Welcome to The Walking Dead Talk Through, a fan podcast dedicated to The Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of The Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278 or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts, Brian and Ruthie.
Hey, survivors, and welcome to a slightly abbreviated version of The Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And tonight, we are going to cover the season finale of Season 6, namely Episode 16's Last Day on Earth. Certainly someone's last day on Earth.
Yeah.
There is some news, and that is the fact that we know how to finally pronounce one of the writers of this episode. It is written by Scott M. Gimple, and it rhymes with spaghetti, Matthew Negrete. And this is how it's very funny because I had watched a YouTube lecture with him, and the guy that introduced him said his name was Negrete, like Crete or, you know, meet and greet. But I guess it's Negrete because they said it on Talking Dead. So as far as I'm concerned, that's the proper name or pronunciation.
Yeah. Well, Scott M. Gimple was very adamant that it was Negrete. And yeah. I guess when they were doing that lecture, Mr. Negrete was just too polite to correct him.
Must have been.
Happens sometimes.
Yeah. This episode was directed much like, it seems like, all the big episodes anymore by Greg Nicotero. And these three were also the writers and the director of the season premiere, First Time Again. So we have an abbreviated news.
There's a couple weird stories on the news.
Yeah.
All right. So we got our ratings in. And ratings were quite a bit up from last week, and they're up for the this whole half season, the high. It reached 6.9 in the 18 to 49 demographic with 14.193 million. And that's up from last week, which was a 5.8 and 12.384 million. However, if you compare this to last season, it's not even close, really. It got an 8.2 and 15.784 million, but ratings have been down all season. But it's also worth noting, I've looked at this, I don't have the actual statistic, but ratings in general are off all across the board for all TV shows, and Walking Dead's actually doing better than most TV shows, so...
Interesting.
Yeah. Talking Dead got a 3.09 in the 1849. I don't know how I got two decimal points, but with Shorty saying hello.
Okay. I was going to say,
off with your caller, Shorty. anyway, with 6.378 million viewers. It also got record ratings in the UK. With 859,000 viewers. I don't normally see that, but when I was searching for ratings, that's the first thing that came up.
Interesting.
And you actually contributed in a little news piece, didn't you?
I know! I have a news item! I did. If you have never seen Lip Sync Battle, then you should take this opportunity to go and watch it, because this past Thursday, as in like a few days ago, 4 days ago, whatever, it had Lauren Cohan and Sonequa Martin-Green, or as we refer to them, Maggie and Sasha, It's amazing. I love this show because it's hilariously funny to watch, but, and like it gets, you get to see them, you know, the actors who portray these characters that we love, and they're like cutting loose a little bit and having some fun. And it's just fun to watch them acting goofy and stuff. And, if you have seen it, watch me whip. I love this show. Anyway, it's a guilty little pleasure. And mm-hmm. it's like having to choose between two, like pick a favorite child or something, having to choose between them. So anyway.
That's on Spike, is it not?
It is on Spike. And it's hosted by LL Cool J.
That's right.
Ladies love Cool James. Yes, I love him too. He's awesome. And Chrissy Teigen is hilarious. And I mean, okay, there was a really funny scene that I'm not going to ruin for anyone that she does. It's directly related to the show. Not Lip Sync Battle, The Walking Dead. So you should
okay.
should go watch it. It's funny.
I missed it, but I saw it. I saw an advertisement for it, but well, maybe I'll be able to catch it in on demand or something. I haven't looked to see if it's available, but
I'm sure they'll re-air it.
All right. So now comes the unpleasant part of our episode where we have to figure out a rating. And it's not normally unpleasant. But it sure is unpleasant this particular episode because neither of us can figure out what to rate this episode.
I know. I almost want to wait to the end of our chat here to pick a rating because I'm having a hard time. And I have a feeling that what I have a problem with is probably not what anybody else has a problem with.
Oh, okay.
So
interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to just say that you know, it wasn't a perfect episode. Well, definitely. Yeah. You know, it was probably longer than it needed to be. Probably could have been done in maybe 75 minutes and even 60 minutes. It didn't need to be a whole hour and a half. But certainly that last two acts, I guess, were incredible. So I actually gave it a pretty high rating for that part. I gave it 9.8 pee soaked pants. However, it comes with a big asterisk. And that is a penalty for the last second. In other words, what wasn't in the last second, a dead body. So for that last second, that last second gets a rating of 1 out of 10 humongous bird flip to the fans for making us wait for 6.5 months to find out who died.
So your score averages out to what? 5.4?
No, I would say that it works out to 9.4. It's about equal to last season's finale. So about a 9.4.
I'm still having a hard time giving a number rating. I just am not sure what to think. Honestly, I just don't know. I might defer to until the end of the episode to give a rating because I just can't decide. Honestly, I'm having lots of feels.
All right.
And if I were giving my word part of it, though, I would say JSS references or coronary thromboses.
Ah, well,
that was hilarious.
And we should probably explain ourselves.
As serious as a coronary thrombosis.
You do have the option to defer your rating until our next episode, if you want to.
No, I didn't mean until the next episode. I meant until the end.
Okay.
Of this episode.
Because
after we talk about it, I might be able to nail down an episode rating. Yeah. But I just, ugh.
Yeah. So just to explain ourselves, since we didn't do it at the very beginning, we don't have time to do an absolutely full episode with all feedback and that. So we're going to come out with a second episode this week.
Yay.
Sort of.
Yay. Sort of. Mostly.
Yeah. But it's good. You get more of us and, you know, we'll also get an episode out and we don't have to wait. So that's good.
Yeah. All right. Let's do some fan ratings.
All right. Judy gave it as high as you possibly can. And I love the rating she gave. 10 bitch nuts. And she explained just due to stress factor alone.
That's funny. Okay. Faith gives it 6 out of 10 Lucille's.
Yes. And as you see, there are some very volatile ratings this time. Mandy gave this episode 6.5 Walker Gates. Since we have to wait 6.5 months to learn anything else. Beautiful. I love that. That's very appropriate.
That's funny. Robert says, I'm giving this, Robert says, 8 out of 10, having a nervous breakdown in my lazy boy.
Sophie gives it 8 out of 10 zombie skewers. If it hadn't been a season finale, I would have given it a 10, but the payoff wasn't good enough in my opinion.
All right. Dieta says, I rate this episode 9 out of 10 heartbreaks.
Jeff gives it, I agree with this one, 8 exacerbating endings.
Laura had the same idea as me, 7.75 coronary thromboses. I think it would be thrombosis, like thromboses with an ES, like S-E-S.
Yes.
Thromboses.
Yes.
I believe.
Or as we say, thrombosi.
Thrombosi. That's funny. Like theses or thesis.
Yeah. Theses. Anyway, Malika gives it 9.75 porn stashes.
Porn stashes.
And that is for the get to where you're going guy, as she calls
it. Oh, gosh, that's funny. Okay, I should have clarified earlier. It was Robert W. who gave it 8 out of 10 nervous breakdown in my lazy boy, because we have a Robert G. who says 7.5 dreadlocks out of 10.
Yep. Okay, so... And if I can ever get to the button because of Shorty, Shorty is making his presence in this season finale episode. So we have Awesome Sauce.
Awesome Sauce!
He's being very clingy. All right, Ruthie, what you got?
You need to pay more attention to him.
I am. Right now. I don't think I could give him more attention than right now. He's getting a bear hug.
At other points in time, so that he's not like, oh, you're trying to do something where you need to be by yourself, let me get in your face.
I love this little guy though. He's like my son.
I know, my cat is nowhere to be seen. Usually he's wanting to snuggle, but as soon as the weather gets warmer, they're like, that's okay.
If you ever get, and I'll say, if you ever get curious, listeners, as to what Shorty looks like, just go to my Facebook page. He hit my microphone. Go to my go to my Facebook page, because you'll see a picture of him right on the cover. Excellent. So,
right. My first awesome sauce is Carl locking Enid in the closet. I thought that was hilarious and amazing. And I knew he was going to do that when he said, all right, go get some of this stuff. I knew.
Yeah, I did too, actually. All right. Well, my first awesome sauce was, and I didn't pick up on this on the first viewing, but at the Walker Red Rover, Sasha takes out three walkers with a single shot.
I saw that the first time. I thought it was amazing.
It was.
Like, that's so cool. She's like, oh, we're doing this. Boop.
Yeah.
I think she did they were kind of lined up in the perfect way. So she just fired straight through them, basically, and then kind of turned a little bit and got the fourth one or something. Or maybe the fourth one was left sitting up or something. I don't know. It was awesome, though. Definitely awesome. Okay, my next one was when Morgan says to Carol, I'm going to start listening to you real soon.
Yeah, that, I actually like that too. My next one is also a Morgan and Carol part. Now, that's right at the end of that story when they encounter the guys in, I think those are hockey pads. I don't think those were football pads. But anyway,
they're not football, I don't think.
Yeah, they look like hockey or maybe even lacrosse pads. They were the guys on horses and whatnot, knights. And I believe we will find, they are from the kingdom. We'll, I'm sure, find out, first episode next season.
Hopefully. Gosh. Yeah.
But it's good to know that there are other nice colonies out there, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. At least everyone they meet aren't creepsters, horrible people.
Yeah.
Okay, my final awesome sauce was Carol laughing and joking when that guy shoots her, which I think just pissed him off even more, which I really liked because she's like, it seems like she just knows what's going to really hack that guy off, and she does it. Like, she's lying on the ground with bullets in her, and she's bleeding, and she's making that guy, like, crazy. I was like, man, Carol is just like, you can't ever die, Carol, because you are amazing. And I'm really glad that as we end the episode, she's only wounded, not dead. Mm-hmm. Maybe mortally wounded, but I hope not mortally wounded. I hope she's just dead. I mean, like, that guy could have clipped her femoral artery, and then she's in a bad way unless they get her somewhere quick.
Right.
But I don't think that's the case, or else they wouldn't have been sitting around jabber-jawing.
Yeah, and just like, you know, a James Bond.
She would have bled out in seconds.
Like a James Bond villain, you know. The guy.
He was monologuing.
Yeah. Just, you know, just kill her off. Get it over with.
I know. And she eggs him on. Can't just walk away and get what you want. I was like, man, she's so like, oh.
Yeah.
I love her. Love Carol.
More on that later, because I had something to mention there. But
right.
I had more awesome sauce, but the listeners already mentioned it. So
they steal him again.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Judy said that her awesome sauce rover moment was Red Rover, let Rick come over.
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Red Rover, let the walkers rove on over.
Yeah.
That is hilarious. All right. Faith has a couple of awesome sauce. She says, awesome sauce for the edit. Awesome cuts throughout. And then she also says, Rick's face when he saw Michonne's and Daryl's stuff was nearly heartbreaking. And then seeing his face when they came out of the truck showed hope for the slightest of moments.
Mandy said it as good as I could possibly say it. Her awesome sauce was J.D. Morgan as Negan. Just all of it.
Yep. Agreed. JDM was amazing. Is amazing.
He hit it out of the park. He was everything I thought Negan would be and more. Loved it.
Agreed. All right. Do you want to?
Yeah. And she has a second awesome sauce. The knights that rescued Carol and Morgan. I actually cheered out loud when they showed up.
Sweet. Okay. Robert W. says, awesome sauce moment. Morgan killing when he has to.
Yeah, again, that I had that one originally, but when I saw Robert put it on, I took it off. Sophie says, we have several new people approaching other humans without guns pointing at them, looking to shake their hand in greeting. I know nothing about this kingdom other than the name of it, but they do appear awfully friendly for the zombie apocalypse. Yeah, I'm going to look forward to that.
Yeah, I don't know if she means that in like a they seem sneakily too friendly or something else, but I for one was glad that not everybody is a psychopath.
Yeah.
Or whatever in waiting. Okay, Dieta says, my awesome sauce is Rick's face when Negan was talking. Killer look.
Monica says, help from the kingdom sealed with a civilized handshake.
Nice. Laura says, Eugene. This was a great episode for him when he gave the recipe for bullet making to Rick and sat behind the wheel of the RV ready to go on what seems to be a suicide mission. My heart completely sank. That feeling of dread and sadness is just a touch of what I expected to feel at the end of this episode.
Malika said, awesome sauce would be seeing JDM. I hate to hate him.
Yeah. All right. Robert G says, my awesome sauce is the still shot of Father Gabriel standing at the top of the Alexandria wall with the rifle on his shoulder, looking like he owns the place. Never thought I'd ever have Father Gabe as an awesome sauce subject.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally get that.
All right.
Well, I think this is the most obvious thing ever, but we have a...
You're worthless and weak!
Yes, we have a weak sauce. Who died? We don't know. We have to wait. more than half a year. That is weak. I have a lot more to say about this. So much more. I don't even know if we can cover it tonight because we don't have all the time we normally have. In fact, we're not going to do your feedback this episode. We're going to do that later this week. But we'll see how it goes. But I have so much to say. I may all not right. say any of it.
So much to say, I might be speechless.
Yes. And to that end, as part due of the same issue, and you'll see when I actually do talk about this, the AMC Hype Machine. Yeah, I would say thumbs down on you people.
You people.
Do you have any weak sauce?
Nope.
All right. Let's go to discussion.
I'd like to have a calm discussion on this topic. You think we can manage that?
Well, unlike last week's cold open, this was actually long.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. And it starts with those whistling. God, I hated that whistling by the end of this episode. And distorted vision that we see throughout. And yeah. Actually, my thoughts on a lot of things actually come out of that. Morgan, notice that sign he found looked a lot like the Don't Open Dead Inside. It's like the same font was used.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you are alive.
Yeah.
What the heck was that sign about anyway? I was like, what?
I don't know.
I don't know. Things are weird. People are weird. It's the zombie apocalypse. Stuff's weird.
I think Morgan doesn't say anything unless he has someone else say it or he reads it somewhere. Because you notice a lot of the things that he said this episode were things that Eastman said.
Haha, that's funny. Yeah, I didn't really care for the whistling. And I honestly thought that they could have just completely left out all of the scenes with Daryl, Rosita, Glenn, and Michonne in the dark. They could have just left those all out, and I think the episode would have been just fine. I kind of thought like they didn't really, I don't know. I've said before, you know, I like it when they take chances and they do different things and all that kind of stuff. But this, I kind of felt like it was a miss, in my opinion, this time.
I believe they're there intentionally.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I think they could have left them out and had the episode be 60 minutes instead of 90 and been just fine. I mean, I know they didn't add up to a whole half.
I was going to say there were a few seconds. That's all.
Well, still, they could have left that out. And well, anyway,
you talked about Carl sticking Enid in the closet.
That was hilarious.
Yeah.
I'm like, has she never seen an episode of TV or anything ever to not see that coming a mile away? I mean, come on. Okay, you can come. Like, no, you can't come with me. You can't stop me. Okay, go in that closet over there and get something for me.
The take that I had is obviously I think those two have a romance going. You know, we haven't seen them kiss.
Yes, we have.
In the tree? Okay.
Well, that counts as a kiss. A kiss is a kiss. Just like dibs. A kiss is a kiss.
Would have been nice to see a little smoochy, a little teenage smoochy. A little peck. But clearly, you know, he deeply cares for her and he was trying to protect her. And I thought that was cool. And yet Carl is going to do... He said this later, but you know how he owes it to them. Like, mm-hmm. You know, that's why he was going, not just because he needed to be there, but he felt like he owed it to, you know, Maggie and everyone else to be there. So anyway, Carl was cool in this episode. I liked him.
Yep.
But it seems like no organization in Alexandria. First, Abraham and Sasha, volunteer to come along. Then Eugene does. Then Aaron does too. It's like, I'm thinking to myself, who's going to stay behind? You know, what if
all of the saviors come? That's who's going to stay behind.
Yeah. Such such warriors as Father Gabriel, Spencer, and Tobin.
Hey, man. They're doing all right.
To that end, I am impressed with Gabriel.
I know. Wonder of wonders.
He showed how organized he was, you know, and I think that command needs to be organized, and we don't see enough organization in, you know, Rick's rule seems to be flying by the seat of their pants a lot. And, you know, there needs to be more planning, more organization.
Well, there was, though, because remember last week when Michonne was like, Maggie has us on a strict schedule and you don't want to piss off a pregnant lady.
Yeah, you're right.
So they're organized. It's just people are impulsive. They do dumb things sometimes, apparently.
Yes, they do. Yeah. So now the whole thing about, you know, I was kind of surprised when we get back to Morgan, how quickly he found Carol. I was kind of surprised. I didn't expect that to happen so quickly. Not in the cold open. But the most interesting thing in many ways about that cold open was this guy who the saviors were chasing, and that it was clear that they were going to make an example out of him, but not for his people, because they were all dead.
Yeah, I thought it was obvious that who the example was for, honestly.
Yeah.
I think my biggest issue, and I'm just going to put this out there right now, I think my biggest issue with this episode was how much things were telegraphed. And I was like, just eye roll and okay, yeah, we know who the example is for. It's ham-fisted, I guess.
Yeah.
A little bit too ham-fisted. I'm like, all right, you know, great. We're going to, you know, give our people an example.
It was pretty, yeah, I can actually see that. It was kind of deliberate and kind of predictable for that matter. Well, yes, sort of.
Predictable, ham-fisted.
Yeah.
Telegraphed way too much. Kind of like, okay, let's do something unpredictable. Anyway. That's kind of where I was.
All right, moving on. So into Act One, Carol doesn't understand why Morgan went searching for her. I thought it was kind of cool, Morgan's response to her there. I think that was in the cold open, you know, that, like you mentioned, you know, he'll
start listening to you one of these days. Real soon is what he said. I'm going to start listening to you real soon.
Yeah. And yeah, Carol is kind of off the deep end at this point, I think, at least in this episode. So here's one question. During that first, didn't know what else to call it. I called it in my notes a blockade. So, you know, when the saviors were blocking the road the first time, and Mr. Pornstash, was there, and they had that whole, you know, last day on Earth conversation. Rick didn't even try to go through the blockade. You know, he didn't try to take him down.
I said, no, he did not.
Why?
I have no idea. And this is my biggest problem with the whole episode. I feel like the plot is the reason why he did not go through. And I'm like, how did they know that our gang was going to be leaving at this exact moment in time? I mean, it's clear that they had this huge, elaborate ordeal set up or whatever. And I don't know if they just had every road out of Alexandria blocked, or if they somehow knew where they were going or something, or if they just had this whole shebang set up and in anticipation of potential departures. You know, I'm kind of like, well, how did they know? I'm like, I have that written down on so many, at the beginning of so many of the scenes on my note cards. How did they know? How did they know? How did they know they were leaving?
I have a theory, and I don't know if we'll end up actually figuring this or find this out. But my thought is, you know, what if Maggie is not losing the baby? You know, what if this is not a miscarriage? What if the Saviors did something to her, somehow slipped something to her to make her ill that would cause them, knowing that they don't have a doctor, knowing that they've probably been, you know, putting full recon on Alexandria, you know, probably doing double, triple shifts at this point, know that they don't have a doctor and they have this pregnant woman and she's going to have to go. And they probably know that by now that, you know, they've been dealing with the Hilltop. So they set this up knowing that our group's going to have to go to the Hilltop to deal with Maggie. So only your point is exactly, I had those same thoughts until I thought of, okay, what if they did something to her? Now, I don't
how?
Know.
How? And when?
I mean,
and how would they know that they don't have a doctor anymore just because they killed Denise? I mean, how are they getting this kind of intel and not actually being inside the walls?
Well, they have the four, they have Daryl, you know, Daryl, Rosita, Glenn, and Michonne. I'm sure that they could have found out that they don't have a doctor from.
But this point in time, though, it's too late to figure out. Like, they had this all set up before they had them. They had to have.
Yeah,
and besides that, they didn't really look that beat up. I don't think that those four would have just started jabber-jawing. Especially Glenn about Maggie. This is my biggest problem with the episode is I don't understand. Like, it just feels like, I mean, I understand at some point in time you have to have a little bit of coincidence in order for a story to happen. But this to me is way too much coincidence. It's like, okay. It's like we don't have a story unless they don't drive through the first blockade, unless they don't try to go through the first blockade. But then it's like, as it continues on, you're like, this is very elaborate. And mm-hmm. I wouldn't think that they would just have something like this set up without knowing that they're going to get something, that it's going to pay off, basically. Right. I mean, that's a lot of setup for nothing, just to wait around and hope that they leave Alexandria, you know? And so how did they know they were going to leave Alexandria at that particular moment in time?
And how long would that have taken to set up? You know?
Yeah. I don't know. I just...
Yeah.
I don't know.
I do not have a comeback for that. That's why we make a good team. Cuz I think of stuff, you think of stuff. This is a great point you made. Fantastic. So.
Sigh.
Yep.
And Abe again, what the bitch? I was like, "Oh my god."
Bitch nuts.
I know. His thing is funny. And I gotta tell you, there are other people who just don't understand at all why Abraham and Eugene speak the way that they do. And to those people, I would say people really talk like that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever lived in the South, you know, or you've ever been to the South, or you've ever spoken to someone who is an out and out, you know, hick from the sticks or whatever. They're from like, what is it? Houston area. Didn't they come from Houston?
Yes.
And I mean, that's like Southern Texas. So you're pretty South. And who knows if Houston's a large city and probably pretty cosmopolitan, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But they might have been from like outskirts of Houston.
Right.
And Houston is just the nearest large city or whatever. I mean, Texas is freaking big.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I lived in Jacksonville, Florida for a year and a half. And,
nice.
Yeah. I loved living there. And there were a lot, you know, there were people that, you know, had no accent. And then there were people that had a very Southern accent. In fact, spoke a lot, you know, in similar ways to how Eugene and Abraham speak. But the funny thing was there were a lot of people that spoke both ways. That literally is like a switch. Mm-hmm. They turn off and on.
I do it too. Sometimes I pull out the hick just because. Why not? It's fun.
Yeah. Getting back. So, you know, the guy, what's his name? Stephen Ogg. We never got his character's name, but I was calling him like Savior Number One.
Porn Stash? Is that who
you're talking about? Porn Stash, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. Talking about, telegraphing things, like he was saying, plenty of ways to get where you're going. It was kind of like, yeah.
Yeah.
Plenty of ways, and we're going to be there for each way.
Yeah. And okay, that's another thing. I didn't understand. Okay. I feel like, again, maybe this is just because I've seen a lot of TV and they are out of practice of watching TV. So maybe they forgot. But I just felt like immediately when they run into that group the first time, I thought I had the same thought as you, which was, why don't they try and go through or around? Or why didn't they try and take them out? I mean, they were more evenly matched in that first meeting than they ever were in any of the subsequent meetings.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if, based on the size factor of the Saviors, it's possible that they had a backup group behind that first one or whatever. But still, I just kind of felt like, I don't know. I felt like they should have at least tried. And I understand that he's trying to play it safe because they've got Maggie in there. But
and one piece of, one vehicle, and it's an RV that's not exactly new. So if it broke down, they'd kind of be screwed. Maybe that's part of it.
Yeah. Well, and I think that was also a mistake. They should have had a support vehicle.
Yeah.
But I digress.
I thought of that too. My mark is going down. I kind of knew it would, though. I think
if I had to choose before we started talking, I would have given it a 6, but I'm gonna try and find things to like more about it. Okay, let's move on.
All right, we get, of course, the next act starts with more of the whistling, and Eugene is kind of being useful. He finds a new route for them. Of course, it doesn't really work out, but we find out about that later.
At this point in time, I'm also thinking, why are they sticking to roads? I understand the RV is not necessarily an, ATV or whatever, but
why didn't they find another vehicle?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe to me, it would have made more sense if they had gone, all right, this is clearly not going to work out in like the way that we thought it was. And go back. I mean, how far away from Alexandria were they really? And was it even feasible to turn around and try in other vehicles where they could have, split off or whatever? And see, this is what I'm talking about. How did the Saviors know that it was going to go down exactly like this? I mean, I just, maybe they saw them leaving, but they couldn't have seen them leaving and been like, all right, let's go. I mean, it's 20, how many miles did he say? 23 miles? 23 miles, that's a 45-minute drive.
Yeah. And it's Virginia, close to D.C. That whole thing about what Northern Virginia looks like in the show versus the actual Northern Virginia, it's always a problem I'm going to have. Because I've been to Northern Virginia, and it doesn't look anything like that. There's people everywhere. So, roads everywhere, strip malls, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I don't understand why they didn't try and take. I mean, it seems to me, like from the very first meeting, it seems to me, and yes, Rick is still being his cocky self. Fine, whatever. But it seems to me that they should have, at that moment in time, they should have been like, because they knew they were on high alert in Alexandria. They were prepping for an attack. So I don't know why they were letting themselves be herded the way that they were, I mean, they basically just, I don't know. I'm like, why are you being predictable? Why are you doing what they expect you to do? That's what I was irritated about.
Why didn't they send someone to go get the doctor instead of?
Good point. Instead of dragging Maggie off. I mean, I guess that would have taken twice as long. But as it is, it's taking twice as long now anyway.
Okay. This is definitely not a 9.4. I mean, no, and I knew it wasn't. I gave it such a high mark because of that last act. It was all Jeffrey Dean Morgan. It was all Negan.
Yeah.
I mean, who's Negan?
But
he is amazing.
Yeah. But anyway, so The rest of the episode definitely wasn't up to speed. Morgan tells Carol finally that Rick also went after her, and she didn't know that Daryl, Rosita, Glenn, and Michonne were gone before they even knew about you. So that's the question. You know, if she had known that, would she have left? I don't know if she would have.
I don't know.
Yeah. And then there's that whole thing about, you know, she says that because she cares about them, that she can't be there. And he says, that's why she has to be there. And I heard him say that. And I was like, that's right. And when she says, if you can't kill for the people you care about, you can't be with them. You know, he brought up something that Eastman said in Here's Not Here, that everything's about people. And, you know, he says that everything in life that's worth a damn is about people. And, yeah, it seems like Carol wants to be a hermit or something right now. And I don't know. It's just, she's got to come back. I can't see her, you know, fading away like she is. I can't see that being the end of her character.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I love her so much, but she's a bit of a conundrum. It's like, in one scene, she doesn't want to die, but in another scene, she's like, just kill me, or just let me die. And I'm like, you just went on and on about how much you don't want to kill anymore, but then you, like, offed all those people, and now, and because, assuming that you didn't want to die, and now you don't care if you live or die. I'm just like, what? What's happening?
Yeah, it's like a constant, you know, flip-flop. You know, her emotions are coming out of nowhere. And speaking of coming out of nowhere,
I don't even think she knows.
Well, speaking of coming out of nowhere, what'd you think about Abraham talking to Sasha about having a baby?
I thought that was hilarious.
I thought to myself, damn it, he does not waste much time, does he?
He does not.
It was a parallel in a lot of ways, because there was that thing about, you know, that this is living. That discussion they had in the car during the premiere. And this is when I heard that and a couple other things, you know, I thought to myself, he's going to get killed. He's not going to make it. He's going to be the guy. But we don't even know if that's true. He might have been the guy. We don't know. All right. So now we get another blockade. This one's bigger. And the thing that I noticed, besides it being different people and a bigger blockade, that they shot a few warning shots, you know, just up in the air. And that, to me, seemed to be a signal. You know, it wasn't, because it didn't seem to serve any other purpose. They weren't shooting at Rick. And
I thought the same thing. And then I thought, well, why are they doing that? Don't they have walkie-talkies?
No. Maybe, like you said last week, you know, maybe they're in limited supply.
Still, if you're trying to pull off something as elaborate and crazy like this, you give each group a walkie if you have them, which we know they do because they had saviors down, saviors down, go to alpha channel beta or whatever.
Yeah. And that was my point. That was my point last week.
Yeah.
Because we knew we had, and I didn't make this point well enough. We knew that our group had walkie talkies. At least they did. I don't know what the heck happened to them, but we know they even had them during No Way Out. So, you know.
I don't know. I completely forgot that they had them. And well,
That's the thing. It's like technology just conveniently goes away on this show, you know, when it creates convenience. Now, here's one thing. Talk about these blockades. What happened to the RPG? You know, I went back.
Take it with them because they didn't think they were going to be doing all this crap, which is why they should have turned around.
This is the thing. Maybe I'm saying this a little early, but who cares? The RPG, okay? I went back to my favorite episode in the whole wide world, Always Accountable, and I went and looked to see how many RPGs were there when Abraham found it. And the answer, at least three. Because the case had two or more. You could definitely see two. And then that walker that was stuck to the fence, he had one. So that makes three. They only shot two. So that leaves one, and maybe more if there were more in that case.
Yeah.
Just drives me crazy. The whole thing could have ended up, you know, just when they got in that circle at the end, just one RPG, boom, end of story, end of Negan. But no.
Well, yeah.
Sorry.
That's okay.
That's way too convenient. But so, next act. And so actually a few interesting things happen on in act three. Carol taking off. Now, you know, I think that was when Morgan, you know, found that that one walker that was looked like he was stuck to the antenna or something at that library.
He wasn't stuck to the antenna.
Hung from the antenna.
He was hanging there, and I think he was hanging on purpose. His feet were chained together, and I was wondering if that was a librarian.
Hmm.
Or one of the people from the library or whatever. I call them librarians.
Yeah, definitely not the TNT show.
No.
I think they would have fared better.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. But he was, you know, clearly that was the guy that we saw throughout the episode. He was a member of that. The library was, you know, much like the kingdom and the hilltop, there was the library, but the library.
Do you think it was, okay, here's what I was thinking. That guy that was hanging was a librarian. He was an example, like the other guy was or something, to the rest of them. And like the building, the beautiful red brick building that Carol and Morgan were holed up in was a library.
It was.
Was that the library where the librarians were?
I think so. I mean, it had a nice, you know, fence around it that would have certainly kept walkers out. So makes me think that it would have been.
And I think that guy was killed by the saviors.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I thought. So then we get the Red Rover blockade.
Red Rover, Red Rover.
And
to me, this is so obviously a trap.
Well, yeah. Yeah. But then it got a little more than just a regular trap when we see that they got Daryl's arrows in one walker, and they had obviously cut some locks off of Michonne. I didn't see anything for Glenn and Rosita, but yeah, I mean,
either it wasn't there or
yeah,
see it.
But you know, clearly, you know, they were now saying, "Hey, we have your people." Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think this is where, you know, Rick starts to lose a little bit of that confidence.
Yes.
Yes.
Starts to lose some of his confidence as well. He should. And I kept thinking to myself, what kind of game is this? And I finally realized it's cat and mouse.
Yeah.
That's exactly what's being played here. And
yeah.
In a game of cat and mouse, you do not want to be the mouse.
And they clearly were.
Yeah. Because the mouse gets played with to death.
Right. And it reminded me a lot of like when they were shooting at their feet, you know, it reminded me of A, you know, when they were at Terminus.
Mm-hmm.
Send them down a path. And that's exactly.
I'm like, you guys have had this happen to you before. Why did you let it happen again?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But this is the one time that they actually go through the barrier. They actually went through this one as opposed to back up. So anyway, so then we get to the next act, unless you have some other stuff.
Nope, I don't.
That was kind of a short one, I think. But then we see another blockade. And this is the one that it's bigger than the other one, the other two that had, you know, people combined. It looked like they were, you know, doing pyramids or something. You were stacked.
I know. It's like they were on water ski, doing a water ski pyramid or something. I was like, what the heck is going on here?
Yeah. And when Rick said, go back, Abraham said, where? You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Where indeed.
It should have been clear. And I think it was getting clear to Rick that they're screwed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he kept saying, oh, we're going to make it. We're going to make it. I guess trying to be positive for Maggie, but, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's clear. It's like the definition of insanity is trying to do the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And that they were doing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
You know? While Morgan's looking for Carol, he finds that rosary. And shortly after that, that's when this was almost an awesome sauce of mine. When Carol finds that one walker, and this is just before that stupid savior lackey. That's what I call him. Soon to be dead lackey.
I called him that guy the whole time.
Who just, you know, for whatever reason, seemed to be hell-bent on revenge. And this is the same guy that wouldn't, you know, put his friend out of misery, was just going to let him turn.
Yeah.
Hero.
Jerk face.
In fact, I even called him jerk face, I think, in the notes.
Ha ha.
So that's about where that happens. But Carol gets that one walker and like is literally tearing the skin off of the walker's face.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That was that was interesting.
But, you know, this is where jerk face, you know, shoots her in the right arm, you know. So, you know, he could have just killed her. You know, he could have shot her in the stomach or something, or, you know, done something that would have made sure that she died, you know, painfully and quickly, but just shot her in the arm. And I just didn't get this guy, you know.
I didn't really understand him either. But what I was curious about was, did that guy lay the trap, or did he pick that as a convenient trap? In other words, did he put that walker in the dumpster thingy, or did he say, hey, this looks like a good place to ambush somebody?
I think it was the latter.
Okay. I don't know. Probably he didn't
seem to be that smart.
No, he was pretty dumb.
Yeah.
I thought he was dumb anyway.
Have anything else to say about that section? Nope. All right. We're making time here. Act 5. So it starts with the whistling box yet again. Mm. Although I noticed there was no whistling this time, and it looked a little different. It looked more boxy than the way it had looked before. It was clearly, you know, related to the other pieces. But that's when I started realizing that this was first person. This was somebody in a box, and that's what they were seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is around the time that you know, Rick and Maggie are talking, and Maggie says, "I believe in you, Rick."
Yes, Maggie says, "I believe in you, Rick." Does anyone ever say that to Negan? Do you think? Not "I believe in you, Rick," but "I believe."
Who's
in
you. Negan?
Not "I believe in you, Rick," but "I believe in you, Negan." Do you think anyone has ever said that to Negan?
What, are you serious?
I am serious.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know,
you think so?
He's definitely got something going on, because it seems
but it doesn't seem like he is the kind of person that inspires people to say things like that. I think
he seems like he's got some kind of charisma. I mean,
yeah, but not that kind. To me, his is more like a "follow me because I'm crazy and I'll kill you." Or "I'll kill you."
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, like the people that carved the bat into the gun, and, you know, guy at the satellite place with the Polaroid shots, assuming that was Negan, you know, Negan Polaroids. Clearly, there are some that worship him.
Yeah.
Why, I don't know.
Neither.
Yeah. There has to be some kind, I guess I'll say this now. There has to be some kind of like minor league system within the Savior organization, because clearly those ones that were at that satellite place that our people were able to, you know, lay to waste very easily.
They're waiting to be called up to the majors.
Yeah, I think they were in the rookie league. You know, they clearly were, you know, they were junior varsity.
JV Savior. Oh goodness, that's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, they that's what it seems like to me. It's like, in order for them to be so incompetent that, you know, like otherwise, like how did Negan's people look so incompetent when we first meet them and yet end up so dominant by the end of this episode? And the only way I can say is that, you know, he's got some kind of hierarchy. You know, he's got his elite forces and he's got his infantry, you know, and it's the only thing that makes any sense. Anyway, with the, get back to the, you know, Mr. Jerkface and Carol, you know, they start talking and she just starts to laugh, you know, practically, hysterically. and he says, you know, what was it? Asked her what's wrong or something. And she says, there's nothing wrong with her now because she's going to die. So what does he do? Shoots her again. And was it in the leg or the hand?
The first time he shot her in the arm, right?
Right.
The second time it was in the leg. Which is what I was concerned about, because that's your femoral artery is there and you'll bleed out in seconds.
Yeah.
Unless he's just completely ridiculously useless.
I know other places had said it was the leg, and I couldn't tell. I was looking at it on an iPad and didn't have the resolution. Anyway, so, you know, then she taunts him for leaving her without, you know, finishing her off. And she says,
he's like, you think you've suffered enough? And she goes, no, I guess not. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Here she is cracking jokes.
Yeah. And then, you know, he's like walking away and, you know, she says like, the world doesn't decide. You decide. You don't get to walk away and get what you want. And then the whole thing about how does this jerk face, this jerk wad, have Morgan on a horse show up and come out of nowhere? It's a horse. I mean, horses make noise.
They go clap, clap, clap.
It is that whole theory about everyone losing their hearing in the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. You're using coconuts.
Yeah, so this was a scene that I love, though, you know, when Morgan confronts him and he tells him that, you know, that basically warns him and says that, you know, he can survive this, basically telling him, look, you know, if you just walk away, you know, we'll find you help. And that's how I thought he intended it. You know, let's call a truce and let's, you know, get you both help. That, and of course, jerk face, you know, wouldn't do that. And
I don't think I will.
Yeah. So Morgan does what I was hoping he would do with Chekhov's gun, and he shoots the guy. He shot him good. He shot him real good. He shot him
up real good. Yeah, he did.
Six bullets.
Six times he shot him up real good.
Yeah. Right into the guy.
Here's my question. Is it out of character for Morgan to shoot, and six times, no less? Or are Morgan and Carol really just two sides of the same coin?
B. I think that they... Okay. Yeah, I think that although slightly different, I think that the two of them have way more in common than not in common. They are dealing with the same kind of demons. And Morgan has, you know, left or, you know, been living by this credo since Eastman, but he's reached this point where that credo will not fit. It cannot solve the problem that exists at that moment. If he does not act and shoot the guy and kill the guy, he will kill Carol, and he cares for Carol, you know. And he does what he needs to do. And, you know, I think it was something that Morgan was coming to terms with over the course of the season, you know, and maybe though with at least Morgan, he's reached a balance where he doesn't want to kill you. He'll do everything not to kill you. But if it comes to that, he will kill you if there's no, if it's a last resort. And that was a last resort. You know, it was either kill him or she dies and.
Yeah. Or let him kill Carol.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, what she said earlier in the episode was very appropriate. If you don't, you know, you kill because you have to protect the people that you love. And I think he is showing Carol that he really does like her.
Yeah.
Even though they've been, you know, at odds or what have you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just love this. I thought that this was, a turning point for Morgan and, something that I think had been, like I said, he was building to for the whole season. And, so glad that he was able to, come to terms with things. And of course, then they come to terms with meeting new friends. And that was that I was so happy when I saw those two guys. Cause yeah. I thought to myself, you know, I spent the whole episode thinking Carol's going to die. Carol's going to die. There's no way she's going to get, cause there's no way that they'll be able to get her, you know, to the hilltop because they went east, the hilltop's west.
Mm-hmm.
I think the hilltop's west. I know. Okay. I know the satellite place is west. Well, okay. North. It's in a different direction.
Yeah. In any case.
Yes.
Different direction.
But it appears that those guys are from the kingdom as much as I know about the kingdom. So very happy to see where, and that's going to be part of the world that is season 7. All right. And done with that story. And the last two acts are with our Maggie rescue party or whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
They come across the big pile of logs. And I'm thinking, and they realize it. Like Eugene says, in order for them to be able to do this, it's not just personnel. They got equipment. I mean, mm-hmm. take, you know, big, you know, bulldozers or backhoes or whatever, to be able to put that together. And like you say, I mean, this couldn't have been a you know, a one day thing. This must have been planned for weeks.
You would think. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I certainly days. I mean, I don't know how it could have been any other way.
Or at least all day.
Would have been a busy day.
Well, I mean, they apparently have enough people to do that. But at the same time, I'm like, well, anyway, I've already said.
Yeah. But the thing about this one, of course, is that porn stash savior guy is there.
Yes, he is.
And that's when they hang that guy off the bridge, you know, just to
be douchebags.
Yeah. Yeah, just to prove a point. And then all of a sudden, just miraculously, the logs go on fire. It's like, I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
So that's when Eugene shows that he really has grown a pair, though. And he suggests basically to take the RV and, you know, try to divert everyone, you know, Negan's people away from the rest of them, and they'll go the rest of the way on foot. Now, my thought was, okay, well, exactly how far are they away? Because that seemed like a long way to go if they're that far off. I don't know.
They must have. They said it was only a few miles now.
Yeah.
So my thought was, I think Eugene's idea is a good one. I just think it's a little too late.
Right.
It's too little too late. And, you know, why didn't they try this kind of out of the box thinking earlier?
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, definitely not a 9.4. but that this part where, you know, they say goodbye, Eugene gives them the plans for the bullet factory, basically, and they have that goodbye with Abraham. And I thought to myself, now it looks like it could be Eugene or Abraham as part of this, based on what we were seeing. And then shortly after that, then you see, you know, Carl talking to Rick, and he says something like, he won't let happen to Denise happen to anyone else again.
I'm not going to let anyone die like that ever.
Ever.
Oh, dear. You're speaking in
Yes.
Superlatives or whatever. Is that what it is? Superlatives?
Yes.
Superlative absolutes.
It's
not ever,
it,
never, ever.
It's like the, you know, the addict saying, I'm never going to have another shot of heroin. You know, never going to do it. I'm what's his name? Nick from Fear the Walking Dead. Mm. I'm going to be clean right away. I'm going to beat this thing. And then, you know, 2 days later, he's getting morphine drip from the, you know, house, a couple houses down, you know, just. That was a similar kind of thing to me. It was just like that. Mm-hmm. That is the kind of thing. Don't ever say something like that because you're going to be proven wrong very quickly. Unfortunately, he was proven wrong very, very quickly after that because we start hearing those creepy whistles, and then it's followed by hundreds of creepy whistles in unison.
Yep,
that was scary. This was a scary moment. I thought.
I agree. It was very scary. I didn't like it.
Yeah. And, you know, this is something I noticed when they were kind of disarming everyone and, you know, they're pulling out Glenn and Daryl, Michonne and Rosita out of there. And we also see that they've got Eugene. I happen to notice Porn Stash. That guy's pretty tall. He seemed to tower over Rick.
He was very tall.
Yeah. So then we have the final act, and this is, of course, our introduction to Negan.
Who's Negan?
Well, now we know.
Yep.
And we said it already, but he hit it out of the park. I mean, he was I should mention this. You know, I know you know this, but as part of the podcast, in case, like, my satellite goes out, I buy the episodes as well. And I was wondering, okay, there's been all this talk about whether or not they were going to have like a censored and an uncensored version. And if they had the uncensored version, would, you know, this be on a Blu-ray, or would it be on late at night, or would it be on the episodes that you pay for? Well, I can tell you, if you bought the episode, you didn't get it. I did not get an uncensored version. It was exactly the same as the version that was on AMC. So I don't know if that's going to change when the Blu-ray comes out, but I was kind of pissed.
I doubt it'll change. I mean, they would have had to have shot all separate scenes.
Yeah. But he was everything. Anyway, Negan was, besides the swearing, he was everything that I expected Negan to be. Confident, terrifying.
Funny.
You know, just this is nothing like the governor. Nothing like Gareth or nothing. He's nothing like anyone we've ever seen before on this show. He's so totally ruling everything. You know, it's like you can see how much control he has over his environment, over everything. Anyway. He hit it out of the park. I'll say this a million times, and you know, yeah, he's this bad guy, but it's like, I love him as an actor. I've loved him in everything he's ever done, and I love him in this. And I know I hate the character, but man, I got nothing but great things to say about him.
Yeah, I think it was a stroke of genius to cast Jeffrey Dean Morgan in this role, because he's amazing, and he just does Psycho so well, as everyone or anyone who's seen
The Watchmen.
Yes. Or
not, sorry, it's just Watchmen, not right. It's not The Watchmen.
I don't know what it is, but he plays
the comedian.
The comedian. So everyone who's seen that knows. And I honestly, the first time I watched that movie, I didn't really realize that that was JDM. But then I was like, oh.
Mm.
So yeah, he's so good. He's just so good.
Yeah, I mean, I've followed his career. You know, I know one of the first places I had ever seen him was Denny Duquette on.
I was going to say, since he was Denny.
Yeah. And I loved that character on Grey's Anatomy, you know?
Yeah.
He's
so good.
Yeah. So tragic when he died, you know, and Izzy and all the problems that she had dealing with that. Mm-hmm. And, Yeah. The one thing I noticed, and the other thing too, you know, I don't watch The Good Wife. I know you watch everything. Do you watch The Good Wife?
I do not. Oh. However, I did just so happen to see, like, I guess it was the cold open of The Good Wife because it was after some other show I watch on CBS and
Elementary?
There he was. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Was it Elementary? Because I know it's.
No, I think Elementary comes after.
Oh.
I think it was Madam Secretary.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So the one thing I noticed, I was curious about this because the last thing I had seen him in was Extant. And did you watch that show?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought he was really good in that. Mm-hmm. But he seemed a lot thinner. And then I had seen him on some other shows. Like there was, I know one, he was on, what was it called? The Chew. And I seen him on there and he was really thin there. And I figured he was probably thin on The Good Wife. I'm like, how come he's so thin?
I think he was thin on The Good Wife, although I didn't really pay attention that closely.
Yeah. So I was like thinking to myself, I hope he's not sick or something, but
Please don't make it.
He played someone who had consumption in a movie called Texas Rising.
Ah.
Yeah. Which of course is now called tuberculosis, but you know,
that's so funny. When I was talking to my coworker, I said, I think his character had tuberculosis or consumption or something. I don't know.
That's the same thing.
I know. I was like, funny. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway. So, I mean, I don't know what else can be said, about it, but that whole, you know, monologue, which was, you know, all probably 95% him. You know, I know there were a few other, like Rick said something at one point, and Glenn, of course, yelled out. But it was mostly Jeffrey Dean Morgan, you know, having that whole act.
Stage to himself.
Yeah. And then it goes to something I know was in the comics. I know it had changed. I know there was like, he starts like thinking, well, I can't kill you because, you know, don't want to kill a pregnant woman. I don't want to kill you because I would look racist. And, you know, he does a whole bunch of things like that. And then finally he goes to the eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
So did you believe him when he said, I simply cannot decide?
Yeah.
I didn't.
No?
I thought he already had the person picked out.
That's very, very possible. So
I think he was just doing eeny, meeny for dramatic effect.
So finally he picks and, you know, they're going around with the bats and, you know, it was like, oh my God, who's he going to pick? Who's he going to pick? Now, at the same time, unfortunately, I had heard, and I kind of hinted at this last podcast, that we may have a cliffhanger. What I had heard in the cliffhanger was exactly what happened. And I had thought to myself, please don't let them do that. And I had even said last week, I said, if they were to do that, if they were not to reveal who dies, they have to kill somebody else in this episode. And, you know, clearly it looked like Carol would have been that somebody else. But they didn't kill anybody else. In fact, they killed nobody else. So now I've gone back. Literally, I will say this. I have been thinking about this point ever since I heard this potential cliffhanger, which was a week ago today, you know, last Tuesday. And I thought to myself, they better not do this. They better not do this. And they did. And, you know, I'm still really pissed off about it. I can appreciate it more than I did. I was probably on the scale of Scoville's. I was a ghost pepper. Now I'm probably a habanero pepper, you know? It really makes me mad, but I'm growing to accept it, and I'm also growing to appreciate the artistic part about it. But the thing that, you know, got to me, not really got to me, but on Talking Dead, you know, we heard Kirkman and Gimple kind of address this whole thing, and One thing that I liked hearing was that in order for them to do something like this, Gimple said they're going to have to pull off a premiere that makes it okay to do what they've done. And this is the thing. Okay. There was Christy on the Facebook page. She posted something on change.org where there's a petition to literally fire Scott M. Gimple as showrunner and put somebody else in.
That's ridiculous.
It is totally ridiculous because this is my theory, and I will defend this theory until my dying day. This is not caused by Kirkman or Gimple. Think about it, people. This is caused by AMC, the network that all season has been pissing us off. That's who did this. That's the ones that have been meddling with this damn show and causing stupid like this. Like, for example, a post-credit scene that Ruthie refuses to call a post-credit scene because it aired 10 minutes into the Badlands for the mid-season finale. That was a load of crap then. The whole thing with Glenn, and I still go back at those episodes, and I say to myself, they could have been done in any other order to let it go 4 weeks. I blame that on AMC again. And then that stupid little thing they did in the middle of Into the Badlands, where they made you go 10 minutes just to have Steven Yeun say, "I'm sorry." That's certainly what it seemed like. This is the single dumbest thing that any network has ever done, certainly with this show. One of the dumbest TV decisions I can ever remember. Certainly not the dumbest ever, but they're screwing with us. Don't blame Gimple. He's brilliant. He has shown us time and again with the episodes he's done. He is brilliant. If he's left on his own devices, look at the stuff he's done for this show. Every script he has touched has been gold. Okay? It is not Gimple. It's AMC that's causing this crap. And the thing that I don't understand, Ruthie, okay? This is lovely. You're the one that usually gets the ranting. I'm ranting this episode, damn it. The thing that gets to me, okay? What the hell are they going to do in Comic-Con this year? They're not going to be able to show anything. I mean, they don't know who's dead, so they can't show any characters that are there because that's going to tell who lives. What are they going to show? Morgan and Carol? And the people that are at Alexandria right now, that's not going to make much of a trailer, you know? And there's no possible way, no way in hell that we're going to go 6.5 months without the identity of the victim being leaked. There's no way we will get to that episode and it won't be a known thing. That's why I think that this is the dumbest thing that they could have ever done. What should have happened, and I will put my writing hat on for a moment, because I'm only going to make one tiny little change to this episode, and it goes like this. It goes exactly as it did, with it fading to black, and we get the credits. Except, there is a 1 second post-credit scene where we see the victim dead in his own blood, or her own blood. That would have made the absolute impact that was required, and we would have sat here for the next 6 months going, oh my God, how are we going to get past the death of Glenn or Daryl or Abraham or Sasha or Rosita or Michonne, et cetera, et cetera. Instead, we're stuck on one simple, stupid question: who died? And we can't get past that point. We can't get past, you know, how is the show going to move from that point, because we're stuck on who died. That's why I say there's no possible way. I believe in Gimple way too much to think that this was his idea. He's trying to make the best of it. And damn it, I have faith in him. That next episode is going to be awesome. It's just, okay, I think I've said enough.
Okay, well, I absolutely, completely, 100% disagree with you. I found no problem with the cliffhanger whatsoever. I thought it was a brilliant stroke because now for the next 6.5 months, we're going to be talking about the show. I mean, it's the same as when Riker fired on the Borg cube with Locutus aboard, as Gimple said in Talking Dead. You know, it's the exact same. It's not like this is not done. This is not a new thing. We're just, you know, people who watch TV now might not be used to it because they're used to the, you know, I don't know, instant gratification world or what have you. I don't know. I had no problem with it whatsoever. And I think that everyone who does have a problem with it needs to quit being a little bitch baby and just get over it. And
oh, I'm accepting it now.
Well, I accepted it right when it happened. I was like, well played. Well played.
See, I agree with you. And for what it's worth, when, you know, everyone knows who's heard me talk about it, you know, I was deeply in the Next Generation, all the Star Treks of the 80s, 90s, and knots, I guess. And, you know, I nearly sold a story to Next Generation. Nearly did. It was very, very close. It was actually going to be the second to last episode that would have been on screen, but they ended up doing the Maquis instead. So.
You mean, okay, never mind.
Yeah. Anyway. I probably watched that Best of Both Worlds during the, you know, the hiatus. I would probably say conservatively 50 times, you know? So yeah, cliffhangers. I love cliffhangers, right? It's not the cliffhanger portion. What I think is a great cliffhanger from, and it's been on Walking Dead, written by Gimple, was Terminus, when they're going to be pretty stupid when they find out that they're screwing with the wrong people. And you're thinking, how the hell are they going to get out of this? And that's what we spent our 6.5 months thinking of then. And when the show came back, we were blown away. And, you know, to me, that's the cliffhanger you want. The cliffhanger of who was killed. The question isn't deep enough to me. It's too trivial. The answer is going to be given to us in the cold open of the next episode. Best of Both Worlds. That was something that it took the entire, you know, Best of Both Worlds part two to answer. It took No Sanctuary pretty much the whole episode to figure out how they were going to get out of that. And of course, Carol. So that's what that's why I think that is so stupid, because it's a bad cliffhanger. It's bad. It's something that could be answered with one shot. That's not a cliffhanger. That's stupid. And I don't blame Gimple for that. He's trying his best. But, you know, I'm more accepting of it. As much as I ranted about it, I'm more accepting of it. You know, and I'll live with it, you know. But at the time, I was really mad. I just really think that it was a really, really bad decision. And I don't blame them for it. I think it was AMC, the network that just is AMC. Just based on all of their other things that they've done, it has to be AMC, not the producers of the show that did this, that dictated this. Because if you remember, AMC owns The Walking Dead. They own the whole thing. Whereas, you know, some of the other shows on the network, Breaking Bad, for example, which is not on anymore, but Better Call Saul, they broadcasted the show, but they didn't own the show. Sony owns the show. So they don't have as much creative influence over the show. So anyway, I'll stop. But anyway, that's what I got to say.
Okay.
And at this point, this is where we have to end the episode tonight, because we didn't have as much time to do the episode as we normally do, but we're going to come back. Hopefully you will hear this episode. You will give feedback to this episode. Give us feedback to the whole season, what you think about it. just in general, if you missed feedback for this episode, give it to us too. We'll give the feedback in the next episode. And, and we'll also in the next episode talk about our thoughts of who died. So if you guys have thoughts about who died, and I put a couple of polls on the Facebook group, we'll talk about those and any other thoughts that you guys have as far as who was the victim.
I guess the only other thing I would say is that I think I'm going to give this episode an 8. I was waffling between 7.75 and 8, and I just don't think I could go as far down as something in the 7s, but I'm gonna go with 8.
I am going to revise my rating, as I had indicated, and I am going to give it an 8 because that sounds so damn good. I think that's perfect. So we're in agreement on that. So,
all right. And to give us feedback, in case you guys are wondering, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, and you can find all the ways to give us that feedback. We're going to be recording on Thursday sometime after 7 p.m. Central. That's all I know.
So
get it to us by then.
If you give us some feedback Thursday by 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central, we will get it out on that episode. And I don't know. What are we doing for fear? I don't think we're going to have time to do a season 2.
No preview response. Right into it.
We're just going to go straight into it. But if you guys have thoughts about Fear the Walking Dead, please submit those as well. So,
yep.
In our Facebook group, if you haven't joined us over there, we recommend it. It is at facebook.com/groups/walkingdeadgsm. And our Twitter and Google Plus are walkingdeadgsm. So we're not going to end with our usual, our next episode is, because there's nothing to talk about.
Well, our next episode will be our feedback episode.
Yeah. All right. So until then, good night.
Bye.
Are you a podcaster who loves creating great content but gets overwhelmed by the audio editing process? Are you a business professional or an entrepreneur that wants to start a podcast but aren't sure where to begin? You need Pro Podcast Solutions. Pro Podcast Solutions has a robust suite of services to equip podcasters and help podcasters create better content than ever before. Visit ProPodcastSolutions.com today and find out how you can get your first episode produced for free. That's ProPodcastSolutions.com.